You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
Hello and welcome to Disgusting Baseball. I'm one of your hosts, Quincy Wheeler, and I'm here with Matt Dallas. Matt, how are you doing?
Good, Quincy. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing great. Matt, we are counting down the days till Guardians opening day.
Amen to that. You know, there's a lot we're going to be talking about today as far as like what we expect the Guardians to be this year. But I was saying to somebody about this earlier, like, honestly, I'm just more focused on the fact that in what, 8 days, we're going to have actual baseball games that matter. And I'm choosing to let that be what gets me through to the Manzardo and DeLauder call-ups.
Yeah, just having baseball to enjoy every day is great. And even though, as you DM me the other day, we know we're going to start off 0-1 because the A's are throwing a crafty lefty at us.
With a kind of sidewinding delivery and everything, too. And you know that he's had 3 starts against the Guardians, and I think he's like 15, 16 innings pitched with 0 runs allowed.
That sounds about right. I had a memory of Alex Wood throwing a very good game against us, but I didn't know there were that many of them. Yeah, that sounds about right. So what I had said to Matt is today I wanted to kind of talk about who we expect the Guardians to be, or maybe another way to put it is, what do we kind of expect the experience of watching the 2024 Guardians to be like? I know it's kind of open-ended, but I think you and I can kind of work with that framework to come up with some ideas about how we should be approaching this season. So have any thoughts to start off about it?
Yeah, this is probably one of the teams that I've felt like I've got the least amount of a finger on the pulse on going into a year. You know, I was pretty optimistic going into 2022, and I think we were all pretty optimistic going into last year. You know, obviously it didn't come to fruition, but this year I truly have no idea what we could be. There's times when I'm like, you know, with our pitching and if the hitters developed, I don't know how we don't win the division. And then there's times when I'm like, yeah, man, it feels like we'll be lucky if we win 73 games, if we, you know, start Straw and Laureano and Brennan every single day all year. So it's really hard to say. I do think that with this pitching staff, there is a legitimate floor on how bad things can get as long as everybody stays healthy. But yeah, this is a really hard team to evaluate.
Probably a lot of it has to do with there's really no way to be sure exactly the managerial part of the equation. Not that either one of us, I think, has a bunch of doubts about Stephen Vogt. But I guess with a Tito team, you generally assume that they're going to finish above 500 and you're surprised when they don't. And, you know, there could be some bumps in the road for a new manager. So I do think that adds to the air of uncertainty.
Yeah. And the thing with Vogt that, like, I'm not necessarily worried about that I'm thinking about more than anything is these first few weeks of the season are going to answer a lot of questions about who he's going to be as a manager. Right. Like Tito, there was always this, like, he was loyal to his guys and he'd put Straw on the spot. And if Straw's there, he's there. Obviously, it's spring training, but Vogt seems willing to get a little crazy with it, with the lineup from time to time. Again, spring training, take it with a grain of salt. But I think we're going to get a sense for what the actual vision is here, because now there's not a voice like Tito that can stand and interject his own opinion and have it carry as much weight with the front office. I think the front office will have a lot more guidance over who plays and when, especially because Vogt's still learning everybody. So it's going to be, I'm not so much worried about it as much as I am interested to see how it all plays out, because I think there's a lot of unanswered questions.
I feel pretty confident that Vogt and his team are going to be a little more clued into the insights of analytics and responsive to them than Tito was. Like Tito last year, I remember there was the series of press conferences where I think he just discovered the idea of OPS. I know that sounds ridiculous, but like, I don't think that was his main focus. It's not like he wasn't smart and didn't understand like how to put guys in best positions, but I don't think that he was real like analytically clued in for most part. Incredibly successful manager. I think my thing that I'm most curious about is when things go bad, how will players respond to vote? Because you can be a very positive, encouraging person and a good leader, but the thing is, like, when things are going bad and players know that Terry Francona is your manager, you have this underlying confidence, he's going to figure it out. We're going to be okay because this guy's here, and he took a team that was down 0-3 in an ALCS, and they won it. So so that's something that Stephen Vogt can't provide. He has to, like, earn that, you know? And there are ways to do it, but I guess that's what I'm most curious about is how do the guys respond when they go through a bad stretch?
Yeah, and I know that we have lamented the lack of activity and the what activity there was in the offseason was pretty lackluster. But I don't think with a rookie manager, you can't understate the value of having an Austin Hedges and a Carlos Carrasco in the room with those people. Those are two guys that, I mean, I can't think of a position player I'd rather have than Hedges in my room. And outside of maybe Kluber, I can't think of a guy I'd rather have than Carlos Carrasco. You know, those are two veterans that are highly respected throughout baseball that could really help put up some solid bumpers to keep things going well while Vogt settles into the role.
Yeah, great points. And I think Shane Bieber provides the same kind of thing. And obviously Jose Ramirez does too. And I think kind of backing up those guys, I definitely see like Tristan McKenzie and Tanner Bibee providing those kind of like steady, hey, things are going to be all right. Hey, we're going to work through this presence. And then Josh Naylor obviously is a great leader. You can see that and hear that from everybody, and they should just extend them while they're at it. But yeah, I feel good about the vibes of the team. I mean, it's hard to have bad vibes when, like you said, when you have Austin Hedges on your team. So I feel like they're going to be a fun team, no matter if the results are always fun. They're going to be a fun team to watch. So let's talk about kind of the elephants in the room, the Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLauder elephants in the room. So Manzardo is obviously already down in minor league camp. DeLauder's still with the team, at least unless something happened in the past couple hours. He's still with the team, the major league team. But interestingly enough, he's been with the minor league camp, but with the major league team all camp. It's a weird situation. But they're still giving him starts. He's still getting time. And, you know, obviously, I don't think either of us expect him to make it to the open day roster. I think the only way that happens is if they're working on in a pre-playing extension, which it sounds like from all the reporting I've seen that they don't even see that as something that they should do, you know. But if that doesn't happen, he's going to start in Akron. That's what it sounds like, and that's fine. But I think it's probably fair to assume that they intentionally putting him in front of so many major league arms and giving him reps against them indicates that they see him as somebody who could play significant major league games this year. Do you think?
Yeah, I think Andre Knott even said that he expects that DeLauder will get like 200 at bats in the minors and then be in Cleveland. You know, obviously if he, you know, shows up and is OPSing like 650, that'll change, in Double A, but I don't anticipate that will happen. It's really hard to evaluate because on one hand, like there's no shot he makes the opening day roster, no shot, right? Like logically, there's not like I would lose any argument if I was arguing the position that he would make the big league roster.
Like I said, it's only if there's some out of the blue extension that none of us expect.
But he hasn't been sent down yet, right? And yeah, there have been plenty of opportunities to send him down. The season's in 7 days, right?
Right.
What's he going to get in 7 days, even especially if he's not starting? Like he didn't start today. Why not send him down?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where like I'm deluding myself into thinking that it's possible, and I know it's ridiculous. I know it flies in the face of all logic, but I don't know, man. I just got this weird feeling that we're gonna blink, and all of a sudden Chase DeLauder is gonna be standing in right field in Oakland.
Yeah, that'd be great. And the team social media promoting the heck out of him, which they never do with any prospect, like literally never do with any prospect. So that's been interesting. It may just reflect an organizational change in approach, I hope. But Yeah, it is interesting. And 200 at bats. I mean, people, I don't know what people thought about that, but when I saw that, my eyes kind of got big. So I'm like, that's not very many at bats, you know. That's
No, and bear in
maybe
mind too,
50
like
games.
he hasn't played a healthy season of baseball since before the COVID year, you know? Like it's been since 2019 that he was really like fully healthy for an entire season of baseball. That's not nothing. I mean, those 200 bats will put him just about to a full season total in his career in professional baseball. Which to me, you can look at it one of two ways. Either you can say they're rushing him and he's not ready, or you can say the organization that is known for being as slow as possible with prospects is willing to do that with this kid. He might be something.
I think what I'm sensing, and even hearing Chernoff talk to Rosenhaus on the radio that one time, is that they think he's like a hitting savant. Like he just knows he's just gonna hit. And you see that, like we've talked about before, with his odd mechanics sometimes in a swing. But why mess with it when it works, you know? And we've said, and that's that savant thing of like some guys, they just have this ability to hit the ball and do what they want with it. Like, I know RJ, who's great on Twitter, Modelo Lover, he talked about how it's like he's when he hits, it was such a good description. I'll put a link to it in the description of the episode, but he said it's like DeLotter is scooping a scoop of ice cream and then throwing it as hard as he can against the wall or something like that. It's like just a smooth motion to get the ball and then violence, violence, violence.
Well,
And
the thing is that
that's great.
the things you'd be worried about, like the swing is not pretty in the conventional sense of the word from a left-handed standpoint, but the things you'd be worried about with this swing is two things specifically: that he would be unable to hit pitches on the outer half of the plate with authority, and that he would be unable to mid-pitch flight be able to adjust to off-speed, right? Like he wouldn't be able to midway through his swing, pull the hands in, slow down, and adjust to that off-speed pitch, which are two of the things he is best at. So at a certain point, like the swing just works, and not everybody looks pretty with it. And just because he doesn't follow through, I've said this a million times, what you do after you make contact with the baseball means nothing, right? Like you can hold the bat with one hand and point it straight up in the air afterwards, as long as you're making good impact with the baseball. Now, granted, it's easier to make good impact with the baseball if you have a swing that tends to follow through. But if he's doing it, what are you changing? He puts the barrel on the ball consistently.
Yeah, it's well said. And the thing I heard too is like, oh, is he going to be able to get velocity, you know, pitches that are high in the zone? And he just doesn't seem like he struggles with anything. So I think that it just feels like we're going to get a heavy dose of Delotta this year. And maybe it doesn't happen till after they're safe from Super 2 with him. I get it. You know, especially if some of the guys that are ahead of him, if like Brennan's doing better and even Florial maybe shows that he's got something to him, that's going to give the team plenty of reason to say, well, let's let these guys kind of play out the string a little bit before we rush DeLotter up. But I think if you see some guys struggle, that they might be more aggressive with him than you might think. And of course, Manzardo went to the minors. I don't know how you felt. I mean, obviously, I can't make a big argument that Davison De Los Santos deserves a bunch of at bats over Kyle Manzardo, but I would have been fine, honestly, if the team was like, oh yeah, we'd like to see David Fry a little bit, and we'd like to, you know, make sure we get at bats for everybody running through the DH spot. And so I guess I kind of have to be fine if they want to take a little bit of an extended look at Davison De Los Santos too, because I Manzardo, he's gonna hit in the major leagues, obviously. You can see that. But I can also see that there is still some developing to do there. That doesn't mean he's not gonna be, you know, like people say, is he one of the top six hitters on the team right now? Yeah, probably, but that doesn't mean that he couldn't benefit from a little more time in the minors. So I guess I'm not necessarily screaming service time manipulation yet.
I'm kind of in the same boat, to be honest with you. Like, look, I love Kyle Manzardo, and I hate to be the guy that throws cold water on this, but you got to take a couple things into account. One, last year was kind of a lost season for him, right? Like, he didn't play much. He didn't play particularly well in the beginning of the year, dealt with a major health scare from his mother, as well as a lingering shoulder problem. Like, the dude, like, the Arizona Fall League was the first time the guy was really like playing consistent baseball healthily at a high level. He played some in Columbus at the end of the year. There, and at the time too, you got to remember, like, when we traded for him, he was having a major down year from the previous year. So while I do think there is no doubt in my mind he is going to hit at the big league level, I think there's more than anything just a case to be made that him having a runway of going and feasting on AAA pitching for a month and then coming into the big leagues confident, ready to roll, rather than opening the season with the club, and the expectations that come with that. I think there's, for his development, something there. And like we talked about a bunch, there's platoon questions. He's struggled some against lefties. We'd like to see him do it against some higher level competition. It's a chance for him to work on that a little bit, to the extent that you can actually work on those things mid-season over the course of a month. But he's one where I'm not too worried about the decision. It doesn't feel like blatant Francisco Lindor service time manipulation where kids just bored at AAA. I feel like this is a very reasonable move that makes baseball sense, not just financial sense.
Totally agree. I still can't quite wrap my mind around the fact that it really sounds like, from all things that I hear, that Davison De Los Santos is going to make this roster. I constantly come back to, I went back through the past decade and I could not find any situation that was remotely close to, hey, this team should finish like top three in their division and they're taking a chance on a 20-year-old who plays first base and DH, basically. Like, so it was kind of interesting. This is different. And someone had a good response to me and said, well, maybe this kind of prospect hasn't really been available in the Rule Five. And I said, that could be it. It's like the Guardians are like, we haven't seen somebody who can hit the ball this hard, who did what he did in Double A, available, so we can't pass it up. And maybe he's just there for a couple weeks as they continue to get kind of a sense of how much they need to risk to be able to keep this guy. But that's an odd one to me. In fact, I think that's probably the thing that kind of confuses me the most about what their plan is for this year. Everything else kind of makes sense with, we think we can probably win this division and then see what happens in the playoffs, except that one move.
Yeah, so I'd like to do a little bit of a thought experiment with it, because I was thinking about this today. Let's assume they call up Manzardo in June, or first day of June, June 1st, right? So you got April, May, June, July, August, September. So it's 6 months, and you're calling him up in month three. So he's missing a third of the season. What would you estimate the best case scenario for an FWAR total for Kyle Manzardo over 162 games this year?
Best case scenario, geez, 2 wins, 2.5 wins.
Okay, divide that by three, and you're talking about three quarters of a win as the difference between him and a replacement player at first base between day one of the season and June when we call him up, right? So if you look at the upside potential of, hey, we don't know what De Los Santos is yet. That kind of power is not the stuff that usually just falls off the back of the truck for you to pick up. Let's take a chance on him, because let's be real, like, even the best case for Manzardo were a game better, two games better than we would have been. The risk isn't that big for one individual player. I think it just feels worse in the context of Miles Straw is on this roster, Austin Hedges is on this roster. We don't know what Will Brennan is. Laureano doesn't feel like a sure thing. Like, there's enough question marks elsewhere to where you go, man, oh, another one feels daunting. But in the grand scheme of things, that one little shift there doesn't make a huge difference.
Yes, fair point. And I will say, if they put Davison De Los Santos on the roster, I'll be a firm advocate that he should essentially start every time they face a left-handed pitcher. Because I don't think people are like, you can just bury him on the bench. I don't think that's helpful for his development. And you can basically see that at any level of sports. Just sitting and doing nothing doesn't help someone develop. If you really want this person to help you, you've got to throw him in the deep end. It's like the basketball coach I worked with who won state championships. He told me the most important thing you can do for your kids if you want them to be successful in athletics is force them to play people who are way older than them. You know, it's almost like, for me, it's a principle that constantly applies. Like, the more you challenge yourself, the more you have the chance to rise to the occasion. So obviously you don't want the guy to fall flat on his face every day, but I think his best chance for success is to go out there and really try to handle some left-handed pitching. And so I hope they give him a heavy dose of starts, like start him opening day against Alex Wood. It can't hurt.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing, is I would approach him the same way I would approach putting John Kenzie Noel on the roster from opening day, which also kind of begs the question of, like, how much better of a prospect is he than John Kenzie Noel to justify this kind of decision making? Like, we already have Davis and De Los Santos at home.
And I think John Kenzie's a better outfielder. I really do. I mean,
John Kenzie is far more versatile positionally. Like, he can play all four corners, you know?
Really, the only thing that stands out to me as different is that De Los Santos is maybe viable at third base, and I don't think John Kenzie is. I ultimately don't think.
You're right. I have him in my head as a third baseman because that's where he always was in MLB The Show, but that's not where he actually plays.
Yeah, he's pretty stiff out there. But he's more than capable of playing first base in the corner outfield. The thing with De Los Santos is, like, obviously, if he's a 40 home run a year guy who can adequately play third base, that's a lot of value. A lot of value. But that's, man, that's a big if. I know we could spend the whole podcast talking about that. But it kind of goes into this picture of, like, what is this team exactly that we're looking at? And we haven't talked about the pitching at all. You said that, you know, we need the pitching to stay healthy. That's absolutely true. We already know the pitching isn't necessarily healthy, but nothing that makes you really freak out, I guess, because, you know, you feel pretty good about their chances of figuring out the bullpen one way or another.
See, actually, that's the one spot where I would say that I have a lot of concern, even more so than the lineup this year, because the bullpen was not great last year. And you're relying on regression to the mean, and a lot of guys are already hurt. So after Clase and Barlow, Eli Morgan?
Yeah, Nick Sandlin, who's looked good.
Right, like, I have never once seen Nick Sandlin coming into a game and thought, I'm confident, you know.
I'll tell you when I'm confident. It's when there's two outs and there's a right-handed hitter and there's a runner on first. Or no, I should say if there's one out, there's right.
Yeah, and they desperately need a strikeout or a double play.
A double play. He's gonna get you that double play, it seems like, every time. But yeah, when he's coming up and there's a left-hander up, oh, I just cross my fingers and my toes.
The example I think of is, I don't know if how many people remember in 2012, by the end of the year, the bullpen was actually quite good. It wasn't great at the beginning of the year. And that was because guys like Cody Allen came up in May and June after not making the big league roster and formed the backbone of a bullpen. And I think that's what you're going to see this year is opening day, the bullpen's not going to be great. I think it's going to be Barlow and Clase and just hope that everybody else holds it together. But by the end of the year, you could have Aleman, you could have Walters, you could have Mysiasek, Mikolajczyk, you could have a million different guys. I mean, heck, you could even see, like, I would love to see them get a little freaky with Joey Cantillo and pull him up and have him be kind of a fireman strikeout guy out of the back end. Yeah, like, there, Hunter Gaddis has some, like, there's a lot of stuff that'll happen. I just don't think it'll be who's
the roster.
That's true. I just don't think it'll be opening day is when those things happen. Similarly to the lineup.
Yeah, I guess, and I think I feel a little bit better about it than you do, because I see a lot, and you've gone through some of them, but I think I see a lot of potential for guys that I think can help right away. But it's probably wiser to be skeptical of if they're going to be ready. Like, I think Tim Herron's a pretty darn good pitcher, but obviously last year he wasn't ready to be a darn good pitcher, you know? So it's It's possible that same thing happens for like Cade Smith and Franco Alleman and all those guys. And
so I'm a little prejudiced against Tim Herron, and you're gonna laugh when you hear this name. He reminds me of Nick Hagedone. Like just this guy where it's like you should be better than you are. Yeah. Every time I look at you.
Oh man, Nick Hagedone was definitely that. Yeah, I remember that. That brought back when you said that. I remember that feeling so strongly now, because he could throw the ball through a brick wall, but just
it's never just like how come you're not better is basically what happens when I watch Tim Herron pitch. Now, granted, he was a rookie last year, right? He's a kid. Like this is his second year, but I don't know. It just seems like for as good of a pitcher as he's supposed to be, he doesn't pitch good.
Yeah, hopefully he changes that. Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal to be missing Trevor Stephan for the whole year. Sam Hinch's the finger thing doesn't sound like it's a great thing. I mean, you hope a finger thing isn't going to be longer than a month or two, but that hurts. I hope for the best. I mean, Hunter Gass at least has looked dominant in the spring. And again, spring training is spring training, but I do like it when guys do things that I kind of thought they could. And I think the vast majority of us were like, hey, Gattis is pretty good for one inning. His stuff probably plays up out of the bullpen. So it's nice to see that happening, you know?
Right. I will say Hinch scares me a little bit right now. And maybe this is just some lingering Adam Miller PTSD, where anytime I hear middle finger injury in baseball, I'm like, oh, this guy's done for forever. It sounds like it's nothing too serious, but that finger injuries for pitchers are also one of those things too, where it can change how you release the ball a little bit. It can mess it with you to a point where it changes your mechanics enough that you put yourself in danger of hurting the rest of your arm.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I guess I was thinking that it mostly would just require rest and hopefully should be okay, but yeah. Ooh, well, yeah, Hinch's is the one that really kind of made me cringe, because I was like, it's probably okay for Stephan. I mean, not good to have the elbow surgery, but I think we can cover for him and hopefully he'll be back next year, you know. But yeah, that'll be interesting to figure out. I guess maybe I have too much confidence in the Guardians to figure out the bullpen than I should.
And if there's one thing that we've done well my entire life, it's finding random like Rule 5 draft picks, waiver claims, non-roster invites that turn into 160 ERA plus middle relievers. Like it's like clockwork.
And I wouldn't necessarily rule out that right before the season, we could see them trade one of these vaunted middle infielders that we've been asking for them to trade for years. But for somebody that maybe, you know, I picture like somebody who's got like a 12K per nine in the minors, but also a six base on balls per nine in the minors. Maybe somebody who's more in the 26, 27 year old range, you know, that they're like, aha, we know what we could do with this guy. And other teams like, well, we could really use a Jose Tena to be our utility infielder. I could see something like that happening.
Absolutely. I would even say more likely than not that it should, because let's be real. We don't need Gabriel Arias, Jose Tena, Juan Brito, and Angel Martinez to be the backup plan to Brian Rocchio this year.
Yeah. 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 Do you think, I mean, Rocchio's really had a strong end to the spring, but then the last few games, Arias has also got hits. I noticed today, I don't know if you listened today, we're talking on Thursday, but I noticed that Tom Hamilton is not an Arias fan.
Tom Hamilton has not been an Arias fan. I listened to an at-bat the other day, and he said, Gabriel Arias looked completely out of his depth in that at-bat. It's like, geez, Tom, tell us how you really feel.
Today, Arias missed a throw home, and Tom said, that's inexcusable. That can't happen. And I was like, Tom, I mean, come on now.
He talks about Arias the way he talked about Bobby Bradley in the first weeks of 2022.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know how these last couple of days have changed things, but something that I've been hearing from some people who would know is that Rocchio seems to be the favorite going into the season.
Yeah, I've heard those rumors too. It's interesting because I do know a guy, and he's a friend of us on Covering the Corner on Twitter, and he said last year that that the Arias stuff that was the leader in the clubhouse last year, but that was, you know, it may have changed. And I know like this guy's sources are very good. So I wonder what might have happened in the off season and in camp that might have changed things. If that's the case, that's the biggest point of suspense for me, I think, leading up to the opening day roster, is what they're going to do with the shortstop position. And I think I'm in a good place with it, because honestly, either way, I'm happy to see.
Yeah. And I think with people, I don't think what they realize with Gabriel Arias is, you know, he gives us arguably the best defensive middle infield in baseball if he's playing out there, and everything he does with the bat is gravy, you know, as long as the rest of the team's hitting. Like we supported Miles Straw for a year in our lineup because he was a defensive wizard. And, you know, I'm not saying he's in that borderline platinum glove tier of shortstop, but it is worth mentioning that, like, hey, if he could be something slightly below a league average bat against right-handed pitching and a defensive wizard at short, that's a valuable player.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I guess kind of bottom line, I don't think this year is going to be boring. I think it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be lots of storylines to follow, a lot of really good, fun, upbeat vibes players, a manager who's hilarious and also seems like he's just a good dude, and a bench coach who also is just the exact same way, just a hilarious, funny, good dude with a Boston accent. Like, there's just a bunch of fun things to follow here. So I hope fans that are listening aren't depressed about no big free agents, no big trades, because there's a lot of interesting things to happen. Even if Miles Straw is in the opening day lineup, do not faint not, everyone. Hang in there. It's still going to be an interesting season.
And just to offer you all one bit of encouragement, I told you this before we went on the air, Quincy. The year that we lost to the Cubs in the World Series, we opened the season with Colin Cowgill, Juan Uribe, and Marlon Byrd on the opening day roster, getting starts every single day.
Juan Uribe, too, left his impact on the roster.
Yeah, Colin Cowgill is always the bane of my existence whenever I do the Sporkle opening day rosters for Cleveland dating back to 1990 quiz.
Colin Cowgill, wow. All right, well, before we go, what are our thoughts on the Guardians prospects for the number one pick? We're trying to monitor everything. Seems like Travis Bezzana is really kind of putting himself ahead of the crowd a little bit.
That's where I land too. The Daniel Espino injury, you know, I think I've mentioned on Twitter a bunch that I'm a big Chase Burns guy. The Daniel Espino injury has made me say under no circumstances am I drafting a pitcher with the number one pick in the draft. And I say this, you know what a pitching guy I am. they shouldn't touch Burns with a 10-foot pole. And I don't mean that Burns is going to get hurt or Burns isn't a good prospect, but you got to hit on the number one pick. And, you know, I think a position player gives you a lot more chance. I do have some information from some people that they've been really doing their due diligence on some of the prep players. The guy that's come up the most specifically is Connor Griffin. That's a guy that, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's safe to say that they're very high on. They've scouted him a lot, as much, if not more, than some of the other players out there. But it also bears mentioning that the reports on him are probably a lot more incomplete than the ones they have on the guys that played in the Cape and stuff like that. So there's usually just some more legwork involved with making sure they have all their homework done. But Griffin could be a guy to watch. And, you know, quite frankly, that's a potential 4-5 tool player with 4-6 legitimate 60 grade tools.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an exciting player. I think those two kind of top the list for me right now. I saw some people getting a little freaked out by a comp that somebody did for Bezzana to Jason Kipnis. Of all things, that was freaking Cleveland fans out, even though Kipnis had a really great career.
He is way better than Jason Kipnis.
I agree with you, but I thought it was still funny. Like, I was telling people, I think he's better, but honestly, if you told me that, oh, you can draft a number one player, guarantee he's going to give you 20 wins, I'm like, That's pretty.
Yeah. If you told me he was healthy, Jason Kipnis, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, exactly.
But my comp for Bezzana is a left-handed Ian Kinsler.
Mm. Yeah,
that's kind of who nice. He reminds me of.
That's nice. I was kind of wondering about Chase Utley, but yeah, I definitely like the Ian Kinsler comp better. And man, that's a valuable player. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And if he can stick in center field, my goodness, that's who you take.
And I guess it's hard for me not to love the storyline of being from Australia and hearing about, like, he's just got that insatiable work ethic that you love to hear about, where he just goes above and beyond everything he does. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I cannot stress enough how much makeup matters to the Guardians scouting department. It is critical. They have in the past had very talented players that they have put on their absolute do not draft list because they don't like their makeup, which also begs the question about some pitchers that have played in the organization in the past 5 years. But that's a different podcast.
Hopefully they've learned to play.
Yeah, but they do Milton Bradley. I think Terry Pluta wrote about this in his book Dealing, that Milton Bradley was a case where after him they realized, like, the person you're committing this many resources to matters a ton. And if Bazana is the kind of guy that everyone seems to say that he is, and the work ethic, it seems like all the signs are pointing to that he's the leader in the clubhouse right now.
And he could get a super aggressive assignment to start off, like high A or maybe even double A, being 22 years old. So yeah, you could see him make a pretty quick advancement to Cleveland, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's exciting to be able to just follow the college and high school baseball season and say, hey, we could take any one of these guys.
Right. There's
That's
no
fun.
does he fall to us?
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Yeah. Well, hey, Matt, anything else you want to say before we take off? The season's about to start. I guess we should probably just say what's your general sense of what you expect as far as where the season will end up? You think playoffs? You think a little outside the playoffs? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, real quick, I do want to mention draft wise,
Oh, boy.
everybody who's listening, open up your phone, go to Twitter and look up Dakota Jordan highlights from Mississippi State. He's a guy that could be available in that comp A round. Guy has stupid power. It's insane. Like, it's one of the most entertaining highlight tapes I've ever seen in my life. Go do yourself a favor and look that up.
I'm gonna do that. I've heard the name, but I don't think I've seen the highlights.
I'll send them to you. It's impressive.
Okay.
But as far as the question you asked, I'm optimistic. Like I said, most importantly, I'm just happy that there's baseball coming. I think this season could go any number of ways. I think more often than not, we're a 500 team or better. I think we've got a real shot to win the division. I think we've got a real shot to come in third. It kind of depends on how the pitching goes and how aggressive they are with the hitting promotions. If they are, then I think we've got as good a shot as anybody in this division to win it.
I agree. I have to say, like, I really try to convince myself that I was going to predict the Tigers or the Twins to win the division. But I honestly just think the Guardians are the best team in the division. They could get wrecked by injuries. They could be slow to promote guys. But I just think they have the most talent and depth. And I guess I'll rely on the fact that Zips essentially thinks the same thing about the Guardians. Especially with a couple of injuries to the Twins. So I'm going to rely on Zips to be right. And I think that they might win the division with like 85, 86 wins, but I do think they'll sneak their way into the playoffs. And hopefully by then everybody's, going strong, and maybe we have like a vintage Bieber season, and maybe Tristan McKenzie ends the year healthy, and we got Tanner Bibee being who we hope he is, and we can make a run. But either way, I'm going to enjoy the season, and I'm going to have a great time, and I'm sure you will too, and our kids will enjoy it and be learning more about baseball, and that'll be great. So, hey, thanks for
Absolutely. Of
spending some time talking to me about it tonight, Matt.
course. Thanks for having me.